Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Shri Bhakti Vedanta ki jai, Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Giriraj Maharaj ki jai, Jai Gopremana ki jai. So tonight we will overview chapters 9 to 16, the middle portion of the 8th canto. And then next Monday, 7 o'clock in the theatre, 7 o'clock to 9 o'clock will be the closed book exam. The following, actually on the same day, the open book exams are also due. And there are oral presentations as well. So just merely know to get the oral presentations happening.
I don't believe that.
It hasn't started yet. Okay. So everything's on time. Okay. So all the oral presentations need to be completed by next Monday. All of the open book exams need to be in. If they come in after next Monday, you start losing marks, so be prepared. And the closed book exam will be on the Monday also. Like that. So everything is due next Monday, basically. Okay, so tonight we'll overview the middle 8 chapters. So we'll hear about the pastime of Mohini Murti, and then we'll hear about the battle between demigods and demons. And so, if you have anything to add, please add it as I go. If there's anything I'm missing, then please add that in also. Okay. So, what is chapter 9 called? The Lord incarnates as Mohini Murti. So, the Lord, he takes this form of a woman. Lord Shiva desires to see this form. We'll see this in the next few chapters. And Mohini Murti enters the assembly of the demons and the demigods. Now, the demons and the demigods, we've heard in the previous chapters, they've been churning the ocean of milk. They've received the Amrita, which means the nectar from the ocean, which is their main desire, their main goal. And after receiving the nectar, the demons steal it. They want to take it first. They're very enthusiastic to have the nectar. And then the Lord, to protect the demigods, enters as Mohini Murti. Takes the form of a all-attractive woman. Now, Prabhupada, in the beginning of the chapter, he points out that in a cultured society, women are seen and treated properly. And you see in the modern materialistic society, women are not looked upon properly and they're not treated properly. And because of this, people cannot make advancement in spiritual life very easily. So underneath spiritual progress, or the Bhagavad Dharma, or to make spiritual advancement, there needs to be a culture that which supports that. So the best culture to support spiritual progress is Vedic culture. So Vedic culture encourages respect of women, and it also encourages segregation of men and women. Without segregation of men and women, it is difficult to make progress in spiritual life. And we see that many people in this day and age, they are having difficulty in progressing in spiritual life for this reason. Because they are too attached to the opposite sex. Now, in the modern culture, or we can say the modern so-called civilization, there is a lack of respect for women. And it has become extremely degraded. And we see in India, which is the home of Dharma, or religion, we see women are being mistreated. And it's become significant reports have taken place in the media that there is great abuse of women in India, all over the world. But you would expect, at least in India, where the Vedic culture begins, there should be proper respect of women. But even in India, it is not so, and women are being mistreated, and therefore civilization is being destroyed. And because of this, it's difficult to make spiritual advancement in this day and age, because there's not proper attitude between men and women. So therefore, Mohini Murti, she enters, and then the demons immediately become captivated. So this is Asuric civilization. The civilization of Asuras means they cannot control their attraction to women. There's free mixing between the opposite sexes, and everyone's focus on spiritual life becomes destroyed. Therefore, the Bhagavad Gita has warned us again and again and again, we must be very careful about associating with the opposite sex if you want to make advancement in spiritual life. Now, if you're too attached to the opposite sex, you cannot advance properly. Many verses are there. Maituni bhavam etam. Pumsastriya maituni bhavam etam. So the many verses which are there, which are describing this point. Now, Prabhupada quotes Chanakya saying that one should not trust a woman or a politician. So this is Prabhupada is quoting Chanakya, but Chanakya is speaking here in Niti Shastra, which means the Shastra which is there for the kings, the Rajniti. It means that he's instructing a king. Be very careful about women, because the opposing king would send women. Hey, all the kids have to settle down, otherwise I can't. Hey, just sit down and be quiet. Otherwise go out. Otherwise I cannot concentrate. So the women were sent by the neighboring kings to seduce the king and poison him or cause some problem in the kingdom. So when Chanakya says do not trust a woman, he doesn't mean any woman. He's speaking to the king and saying be very careful of women being sent as spies or as murderers, like that. So do not trust a woman or a politician. That's the statement. Do not trust a woman who is a spy or a thief or a murderer. Do not trust a politician because the other king, he may say to you, trust me, but then he will attack your kingdom. So generally we can trust women, generally. Especially our mother, our wife. I mean, if you don't trust your wife or your mother, then how will life function? So when it says do not trust a woman means in a specific circumstance. So here Prabhupada quotes that, but we should understand it in context. So sometimes devotees, they quote these things out of context. I've heard many classes where devotees say, do not trust women, as if all women are evil or something like that. But women are not evil, they're just different to men, that's all. So, in order to bewilder the demons, then Krishna takes the form of Mohini. Mohini means one who will bewilder. Mohan. Mohini means one who bewilders. So Krishna takes advantage of the demon's weakness. Because the nature of materialistic people or demoniac people is that they are essentially weak. So they could easily be led by the opposite sex. So Krishna purposefully takes this form. Everyone settle down quickly. I can't concentrate. Just get in one place and sit. Right? I don't need people walking around the class. So, it is described that he takes this form of the woman in order to bewilder the demons. Now, obviously, it's not an ordinary woman. It's the most captivating woman. But they become captivated completely. All the demons are captivated. Work this out quickly. I can't concentrate. Right, work it out. Whatever's going on, work it out. So, he becomes the most captivating woman for that reason, to completely bewilder the demons, and that is achieved. Right? He takes the nectar back from the demons, he gives it back to the demigods, right, and achieves the purpose of keeping the demigods in charge of the universe. Now, why is it necessary for the demigods to be in charge of the universe? So the universe can follow the principles of Dharma. Because you see that as soon as there are irreligious leaders within society, what takes place? Yeah, society becomes chaotic. So therefore, the Lord, he needs to keep Dharma or order within the universe. Because when Dharma is there within the universe, when order is there within the universe, what takes place? There is peace in society, and then Dharma can be maintained, practiced, and spread very easily. So the Lord always ensures that Dharma becomes prevalent. So what is the purpose of ISKCON? Now the purpose of ISKCON is to establish Dharma, proper behavior. Therefore, we are promoting protection of animals, we are promoting protection of women, we are promoting all of these dharmic activities. Why? Following the regulative principles. Why? So that people can progress in spiritual life. Otherwise, very difficult for people to progress in spiritual life if they do not have dharma as an underpinning. So therefore, whenever we take initiation within ISKCON, we take this vow that we will follow the four regulative principles. Why do we follow the four regulative principles? Because it maintains peacefulness within our maintains a peaceful platform for us to practice Krishna consciousness. And as Prabhupada says, sense gratification and spiritual life, they go ill together. So if you're not practicing or strictly following the four regulative principles, you cannot be peaceful. If you cannot be peaceful, you cannot advance in Krishna consciousness. So therefore, there must be maintenance of these principles. Now, in order to purify themselves, the demigods, they begin to fast, and the demons actually did it as well, in order to purify themselves. They perform some austerity. So the basic principle is before you do jagya, you must do some austerity in order to purify the consciousness. So just like when we are trying to beget children in Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada says you must do some austerity. We must chant 50 rounds. We chant 50 rounds of the Hare Krishna mantra to purify the consciousness, and then we can perform the activity of uniting in order to beget children. So if there is not purification of consciousness, then you cannot perform a jagya. If you try to perform jagya without purifying your consciousness, you will not have success in the jagya. So it is the same. What is the jagya that we do every day? Yeah, Krishna says of jagyas, I am japa. Of all the different types of jagya we can do, and Krishna says the chanting of the holy name. So every day before we chant the holy name, we have to be following the regulative principles. If you're not purifying your consciousness, it is difficult to chant your rounds with attention. So the demigods, the demons, they both had to purify their consciousness to become successful in performing the jagya. So both of them, they fasted, they bathed, they cleansed themselves, and then they entered the performance of the jagya. Now,
but the consciousness is purified by doing the
jagya. Also, but you have to prepare beforehand. That's the whole point I just made. The jagya purifies you, but you have to be pure before you do the jagya. Otherwise, you can't do the jagya. You can't just turn up and think you'll get the results. It's like you just chant your rounds. If you're not acting properly before you chant your rounds, how will you get the benefit of chanting? So, it is pointed out that, Prabhupada points out the purport, that in between the battle for supremacy between Lakshmi and Narayan, Narayan is superior. Even more beautiful than Lakshmi is, Narayan when he takes the form of a woman. So Mohini Murti is even more beautiful than Lakshmi. More beautiful than Lakshmi. But when it comes to the battle for supremacy between Radha and Krishna, who is the winner? Who is the victor? They are equal. Yeah. Radha and Krishna are equally powerful. Now, Krishna is the supreme male, he is the all-attractive male, and Radha is the all-attractive female. He is Madan Mohan, she is Madan Mohan Mohini. So, Prabhupada warns us, and this is based on Shikshastika also, that in spiritual life we must be very careful about associating with the opposite sex, and especially we should be very careful about hearing the sweet speech of the opposite sex. That is the most bewildering feature of the opposite sex. So therefore it is said, na danam, na janam, na sundarim, kavitam. Kavitam. Kavitam means poetry, sweet speech. Sundari means beautiful. So when the woman or the man is speaking very sweetly, it becomes captivating and bewildering. So Prabhupada is warning us that We must be very careful about associating with the opposite sex. Yeah. Especially in regards to
sweet words.
Sweet words, the opposite sex. Therefore, there needs to be segregation. Like that. If you need to associate with the opposite sex, get married. And then you'll always be spoken to sweetly. Isn't it? Doesn't the wife always speak to you sweetly? Doesn't the husband always speak sweetly? Always. That is that.
No.
Not always. Okay. Something is wrong in your marriage.
I don't think
that. Okay. So basically, if you want to associate with the opposite sex, you get married. And then the sweet speech of the opposite sex will captivate and bewilder you eternally. But otherwise, you have to be cautious or restricted in association with people outside of marriage. There must be, formality must be there. Okay, so then chapter 10, what is chapter 10 called? The battle between the demigods and the demons. So there's not a lot in that chapter in terms of purport. not many purports in that chapter. So what are the points within that chapter? That the divine and demoniac natures are all throughout the universe. They are there from the very beginning of the creation. So you see that basically the entire universe is divided into two categories. According to Krishna in the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, there are divine and demoniac living entities. So some people are divine, some people are godly, they are theistic, they are obedient to God, and other people are atheistic or rebellious against God. They are the demoniac persons. So the whole universe is based upon these two principles, and this chapter is a battle between the demigods and the demons. They are always fighting. So what is the basic principle? The basic principle is you cannot be peaceful in the material world, because you will always have enemies. Everyone in this material world has enemies. Only very exceptional people don't have enemies. Right? Even Srila Prabhupada had enemies. He had many enemies, factually speaking. And he was Paramahamsa. It means the most elevated devotee, but so many enemies were there. So in this material world, you cannot escape having enemies. There are always difficulties.
Maharaj
and
enemies?
Yeah, Ajata Shatru. Without enemies, like that. And that's very rare. And Prabhupada was the same as Yudhishthira, that he had enemies. So in the material world, you will always find this duality. So the Bhagavatam is teaching us to become beyond duality. This is called Niyamatsala. It means we should not be, even though duality is in the material world, we should not identify with the duality. In other words, Krishna says in Gita, do not see in terms of friend and enemy. Do not see happiness and distress. Do not see victory and defeat. Do not see all of these things. But simply surrender to Krishna and transcend. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Na Sochiti Na Kanchiti. Become above the effects of the three modes of nature and beyond the dualities in this material world. So the living entities in this material world, they are bound. So even the Bhagavatam is showing us from the very beginning of the creation, there is always battle, there are always dualities, and there are always conflict between the divine and the demoniac living entities. Now, Prabhupada says, how do we overcome duality? He says, by purified intelligence. So when the intelligence becomes pure, how do we purify our intelligence? Yeah, you have to hear the Shastra. By hearing the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam. Right, by hearing these Shastras, your mind will become free of duality. Right? Your intelligence will become purified. And that is the nature of devotion. The more you advance in Krishna consciousness, the less you want to have conflict with others. You just want a peaceful life. And you just want to associate with those you can be peaceful with. So that is the nature of purified intelligence. Purified intelligence means you don't want to be on the platform of duality, friends and enemies and happiness. You're not interested in all of these things. Now, as we go through chapter 10, there are many extraordinary descriptions So once again, the Bhagavad Gita is testing our faith. Just like, what do we hear about which is extraordinary within the 10th chapter? In the battle between the demigods and the demons. What do we hear? What are some of the extraordinary details? What's that?
Vasuki.
Vasuki, yeah. Is that in the 10th chapter?
What the elephant
does. It's in the 10th chapter. In the previous chapter. Why are you speculating? You sure it's in this canto? You sure it's in this book?
The
capabilities of Indra's elephant. So what are some examples?
He can store water, provide for so many
sources. So, do you remember the description of all the different carriers
which
the demigods and demons were riding upon? Right. So, when was the last time you saw someone ride a giant peacock? Or rats? Yeah, you know, they're riding rats and peacocks and all these things. You know, on this planet, what do we see? We see horses or camels or, you know, ostriches or a few things. But you don't hear what's here. So, do you believe all this? People running around on giant peacocks and giant rats and having fun. No, we don't see these things on this planet. So the Bhagavad Gita is speaking about extraordinary things. So once again, the Bhagavad Gita, as it does all the way through, is testing our faith. Do we actually have Shraddha that these things exist? And if you have Shraddha, then you will get a taste for the holy name. Because Lord Nityananda says, the price for purchasing the holy name is your Shraddha. So if you have faith in all these things, then you will get taste for the holy name. Otherwise, we will struggle. That's why the Bhagavad Gita is testing us. So at the very end of the chapter, we see that the Lord appears and he destroys a very powerful demon whose name is Kala Nemi. So what is the basic principle the Bhagavad Gita is teaching us? That if we take shelter of Krishna, we will be protected. So under all circumstances, because we are devotees, if we are serving Krishna, Krishna will protect us under all circumstances. Okay, what is chapter 11 called?
King Indra annihilates the demons.
King Indra annihilates the demons, okay. So once again, it's a chapter that does not have much purport. Many of these chapters are very sparse when it comes to the purports. It's just a lot of storyline. So, we see Prabhupada explaining in the beginning of the chapter that people are born with divine or demoniac natures. How is it that we become demoniac or divine? According to the modes of material nature we associate with. So if you associate with Sattva-gun, and people in Sattva-gun, you also become? Yeah, you become godly by nature. You become a devotee or devotional or good. But if you associate with demoniac people who are in the lower modes of material nature, you'll also develop those qualities. So according to our association, that is what we become in this material world. So Prabhupada is emphasizing that if you want to become a devotee, you must associate with those who are situated in devotional principles, devotional consciousness. And amongst the devotees, we try to associate with those who are more situated in the higher modes of nature, or who have spiritual progress or advancement. Just like, is Jananda Maharaj still here? Or maybe he's leaving in the morning, like that. So Jananda Maharaj has been here, Purujan Prabhu and Mother Jagatarini are currently here. So when we see those who are more elevated in consciousness, who are in higher modes of material nature, and have greater bhakti, then we associate with them. By their association, we also become elevated. So the more progress the association we get, the more we progress. And the more we associate with materialists, or those who have materialistic consciousness, the more we become materialistic, the more we become contaminated. So then chapter 11 is called... Oh, we're in chapter 11, sorry. We're already in chapter 1. Sorry. So, Bali Maharaj, there is a description that Bali Maharaj was fearless. Even though he knew he was going to be defeated by Indra. So Prabhupada explains this is the Brahma-Buddha stage of consciousness. Brahma-Buddha stage of consciousness means one has no bodily concept of life. This was also, we saw in the sixth canto, there was Vritrasura. He also had this consciousness. He knew he was going to die. He knew he was going to be killed by Indra, but he did not resist. Because he understood that the material body is separate from him. So in the same way, Lord Bali, or Bali Maharaj, he understood that Indra was going to kill him, but he accepted his destiny, and he was not disturbed. And he was preaching to Indra, and he criticized Indra, you are in the bodily concept of life, because you are simply concerned in this world whether I will become a king, or I will become something great, or I will become materially successful, but you do not understand your spiritual nature or your spiritual position. So this is the nature of a devotee. A devotee is not so much concerned with the material side of life. A devotee wants to progress in Krishna consciousness. And a very advanced devotee has no concern whatsoever for the materialistic side of life. He is simply absorbed in Krishna's service.
I thought the wife of Bali Maharaj was more advanced because she told Lord that my husband, he was saying that the head, he thinks that head is his, but he didn't think that the head is also, that head is the body and not his.
You always think the wife is more advanced than the husband. Every time you say this. So we haven't got to his wife yet.
Okay.
We'll get to that later.
Okay.
So, once again, what does Bali Maharaj do? Right, because he is one of the 12 Mahajans. So the Mahajans, they take complete shelter of Krishna. Even though he was faced with death, he had no concern. And he had no anxiety. Simply he accepted this as Krishna's arrangement and he was fully surrendered to Krishna. So Bali Maharaj was beyond the laws of material nature. He is a liberated soul. And we'll see in the next section, which we're studying now, we'll see more how Bali Maharaj fully surrenders to the Lord and shows us the perfect example of Atma Nivedana. So what is the next chapter called?
Morning is the incarnation, living is Lord Shiva.
Yeah, this is an interesting chapter. So Lord Shiva, he desires and he prays that he wants to see that form of the Lord who bewilders the demons. He wants to see the Mohini Murti. So he approaches the Lord and he prays that I want to see this female form of yours. And he offers very elaborate prayers to the Lord. Now the Lord smiles at Lord Shiva, and when he smiles at Lord Shiva, he has a grave smile because he understands the situation and he understands that Lord Shiva will become bewildered by him. Now, one of the main focuses of this chapter, and we've seen this theme repeated through the Bhagavatam, and in Canto 10, it is repeated again and again and again, because the 10th canto is directly about Krishna and his pastimes, that Krishna is superior to all the demigods, including Lord Shiva, who is Mahadev, he is the greatest of the demigods. So this is another pastime which we can state to prove that Lord Shiva is greater than, Lord Krishna is greater than Lord Shiva. Yeah, because he becomes bewildered by Mohini Murti. But there is no example
where Krishna becomes bewildered by a Shiva or Parvati or Durga or anyone. But we see that he is able to bewilder everyone. And this shows his superior position. So once again, the Bhagavatam is teaching us Krishna's superior position and Lord Shiva's subordinate position. Because quite often people think that Shiva is the supreme entity. But it's very clear according to the Bhagavatam, according to the Siddhanta of the Bhagavatam, the conclusion of the Bhagavatam, that Krishna is the original form of God. And Narayan is the Supreme Lord. And Shiva is a demigod. He's in a different type of. So, after offering many elaborate prayers, Prabhupada emphasizes one of the prayers, that devotional service leads us to ultimate liberation, or real moksha. Real moksha or liberation cannot be had by any other means than devotional service. Therefore, the Nectar of Devotion has stated to us that a devotee will accept four types of moksha. But he will not accept Sayuja Mukti, or impersonal liberation, because that is not real moksha. It is not permanent moksha. Prabhupada explains, even if you go to the Brahma Jyoti, you will come back again. You cannot stay in that position. Because it's not natural for the soul to be in an isolated or impersonal environment. So the devotee can accept moksha, but only real moksha. And devotional service gives us perfect moksha, because it will give us the four types of liberation. We will go to the planet where Krishna resides. We will take a form similar to Krishna's. We will have his association. We will share his opulence. So all those things are given to a devotee. So Lord Shiva is emphasizing that. That actually it is you who gives liberation. It is not me who gives liberation. Shiva understands it's beyond his power to liberate someone and take them back to the spiritual world. So then, the Lord fulfills.
That's right, you remember in the Prabhupada, it was written that Shiva, Lord Brahma told that Lord Shiva gives liberation.
He doesn't give complete liberation. He can assist us, but he cannot take us back to the spiritual world. So.
Lord Brahma was getting knowledge.
You'll have to show us the part. You have to show what you're referring to. You have to show it to us. Okay, so the Lord fulfills Lord Shiva's desires. The Prabhupada points out when someone comes to your home, you should fulfill their desires. So the Lord, when he sees Lord Shiva comes and he asks, then he says, "I will fulfill your desire." That is natural. That is personalism. And we try to fulfill the desires of others, but even though he's trying to fulfill the desire of Lord Shiva, he is smiling gravely. He says, "I will fulfill your desire. You will see me in this female form that you want to see, but you will become bewildered." So that is Lord Shiva's desire, so he will show it. And it shows that he is superior to Shiva. So then, Prabhupada points out that how do we overcome Maya? Because Lord Shiva was not in Maha Maya. Lord Shiva was in Yoga Maya. So we don't think like Lord Shiva was an ordinary person and he got bewildered like we get bewildered. We get bewildered by the opposite sex every day. We are always bewildered by the opposite sex. But Lord Shiva is not like us. This is not a material thing. This is Yoga Maya. This is the spiritual form of the Lord who is captivating Lord Shiva. So how do we overcome our attachment to the opposite sex? So Prabhupada says we must become grave. By gravity, we can gradually overcome Maya. Now gravity is one of the 26 qualities of a devotee. It is called, it's different qualities, one is called Gambhira. Gambhira means very deep. A devotee has to become very grave or very deep or sober, dira. Dhiras tatra namuyati. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, if you are dhira or grave or deep, then you can gradually overcome maya.
So as devotees, we have to become serious. We have to take sankalpa. We have to take vows. We have to practice to overcome the material energy. And then gradually we can overcome our attachment to the material nature. But it requires a great deal of determination. But spirit, as Prabhupada points out, and Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita, Mahatmanas tumam parta, devim prakritim ashrita. So if you're taking shelter of the devi prakriti, or the spiritual potency, that is more powerful than the material potency. So Prabhupada says, how do we overcome our attachment to the opposite sex? He says we have to become attached to the deity form of the Lord. That's why especially grihasthas are meant to do deity worship. Because if you do deity worship, you'll become attached to the spiritual form of God. And you'll lose your attachment to matter. Otherwise, you'll always be attached to material form, the forms in this world. So, Prabhupada points out that the active principle in this material world is sex desire. So once again, it is an example to us. Lord Shiva is setting us an example. How careful we have to be about associating with the opposite sex. Because if you associate freely or loosely with the opposite sex, you will become bewildered. Lord Shiva was bewildered by the Lord. He wasn't bewildered by an ordinary person, but the principle is the same. Just like in the third canto, Lord Brahma becomes attracted to Vak. Vak means his daughter. Sweet speech. So one of his daughters, Brahma's daughters, she was very attractive. Brahma becomes attracted to her. And Prabhupada points out at that time, he is doing that to show us how careful we have to be in associating with the opposite sex. And Prabhupada says in the Gita, in one purport in the Gita, that even when you are married, you have to be very careful about becoming attracted to other people besides your husband or your wife. Because the material energy is very powerful. She's very subtle. So it is there. So the basic principle of the Bhagavad Gita is that we have to become strict. If you want to associate with the opposite sex, get married. Right? And then you can enjoy yourself unlimitedly. Marriage is just an ocean of bliss. You all look very happy. So, that is the nature of the material world. Regulate yourself and ultimately become attached to the deity form. Husband and wife should assist each other to serve the deity of Krishna. And by serving the deity, you will gradually overcome your attachment to matter. So Prabhupada points out that when Mohini Murti was moving about, her dress became loose. So Prabhupada points out that in a cultured society, there must be moderation. So therefore, the women have to dress appropriately. Right? The women have to be very careful. Do not stand naked before the husband. The only time the husband and wife can be naked together is when they are procreating, when they are trying to have children. But the rest of the time, there has to be strictness. Husband and wife should not appear naked before each other in grihastha life. Because otherwise it's just subtle sense gratification and it will contaminate the mind and simply bind you to attachment to this material world. So there has to be strictness in terms of one's association with the opposite sex. And especially in modern civilization, like in Western countries in the summer months, everyone just takes their clothes off. You go to the beach, everyone is practically naked. Even some beaches, people are naked. So this is completely against spiritual culture or how to make advancement in spiritual life. So Prabhupada is warning us. In a spiritual culture, everyone remains chaste. And there has to be segregation of the sexes and everyone has to dress appropriately and behave appropriately and assist each other in attaining Krishna. In the modern culture, that is not there, and therefore it is very difficult for people to become serious in Krishna consciousness because their subtle bodies are so contaminated by material thoughts of sense gratification. So Prabhupada, he explains within this chapter that it is necessary for everyone in human society to undergo brahmachari training. So Prabhupada created brahmacharini training also, so that men and women can get training. So best thing is that everyone gets training. The children should be trained as brahmacharis, brahmacharinis. They should practice like a gurukul system. They should have some training. Or we join the brahmachari or brahmacharini ashrams before we become grihasthas. Or if we become grihasthas, then we have to catch up. We have to practice brahmacharya and learn the principles of brahmacharya and practice them within our grihastha ashram to purify us. So you have to make up for lost time, lost ground. You have to progress more quickly as a grihastha. You have to learn the principles of brahmacharya. Not to associate with the opposite sex. Even I see sometimes amongst the devotees, probably more the Western devotees than the Indian devotees, sometimes you go to people's houses and everyone starts giving everyone hugs. You know, the men devotees and the women devotees, you see sometimes. They're not doing it like out of sexual, but just out of friendliness. But because I was trained for 8 years as a brahmachari, I don't do like that. Because I went through the training. It's not natural for me to just go and embrace a woman. Right? Who is not my wife. I don't just walk up to, you know, one of the mudajis and say, good to see you, and hug like that. Even though some of them do it. I see some of it more in the Western, you know, in the Western doors. It's not they're doing it because they're coming from that culture and like that. But the point is that it can affect the consciousness. And I've actually seen, and I've actually heard of some examples where problems did arise. Because subtle attachments take place. So therefore, Prabhupada is saying that we should have brahmachari training. And we should learn how to deal with the opposite sex. And that requires mental control, mind control, sense control. That is what brahmacharya is for. So in grihastha life, you have to learn all of that very quickly so that you can progress nicely in devotional service. So, Prabhupada mentions that one of the reasons why Krishna performed this pastime of bewildering Shiva was to make him humble. Because he thought there was a little bit of pride in Lord Shiva. So whether or not that pride was there, because Lord Shiva is a pure devotee, he's one of the 12 Mahajanas. But still, when Krishna does something like this, it is to purify us. He does that to all of us in our devotional service. And he makes us understand we are not as advanced as we thought we were. So he creates circumstances to purify you and to humble you. So you can progress in devotional service. No? Does anyone know what I'm talking about here tonight? Can you relate to this? Does Krishna sometimes do this to you? Yes, Mataji.
He says in the Manusamhita that if a woman who's married, she's attracted to another man and has a relationship with another man, she has to become a jackal in the next world, and the man also will take an animal body.
So be careful. Mm-hmm. Love that. So does Krishna do that to you sometimes? He makes you humble? Mm-hmm. Gives you circumstances? He does this to me constantly. He's doing this to me at the moment, big time. He's dismantling me. At the moment I'm being dismantled. I'll tell you all why soon. But he's dismantling me at the moment. Subtle in the mind, in the body, just turning the whole thing over. Because he's trying to make us understand that we have to become humble. Krishna is destroying our pride. Whatever we thought we were as a devotee, Krishna takes all of that away. Why? So that we can surrender to him. It's purification. So that's what he did to Lord Shiva. Prabhupada pointed out. Lord Shiva, there may have been some pride there, so Krishna completely dismantles him. Makes him look like a fool. So that's what Krishna is doing to all of us. He's taking away all of our pride, all of our attachments, and making us understand that we are not advanced in Krishna consciousness. We are just neophyte devotees. Okay, what is chapter 13? Description of the future manu. So in this particular chapter, this is the one that's only got a few verses, right? 13 verses. I think it's the shortest chapter in the whole Bhagavatam that I know of. Like that. So there's not a lot of purport in there. So basically, the lesson we're learning from this chapter is that the Shastra, or the Vedic scriptures, the Bhagavatam, it predicts the future. And this proves that it's a bona fide Shastra. Because when you can predict the future, then you must be divine. If you can say, oh, something's going to happen, then everyone says, oh, you must be very powerful. Just like in the West, we have one person who predicts things in the future. His name is Nostradamus. Has anyone heard of him? Everyone's heard? You know, he's very famous. But the thing is, with Nostradamus, they change it all the time. They say, in 2001, the world's going to end. Right? And then it didn't happen. So then they say, okay, 2013. And then it didn't happen. So now I think it's 2016 or something. So we're waiting for the world to end again. Because he keeps getting it wrong. So then after some time, people think, well, the guy's not that powerful. Right? Some things he said were right. Right? But a lot of the stuff is very obscure anyway. But when the Bhagavatam can pinpoint something and say, this will happen, and then it comes to pass, then it becomes very powerful. So we cannot see all these things, because we're just in Kali Yuga, but the Bhagavatam has already explained what will take place in the universe. It says, this manu will come, that manu will come, that manu will come. And all these people have come. So for people who are on a higher platform, they will understand so many predictions took place. So it gives us faith in the scripture. We can only see a limited amount of things in our lifetime. Bhagavatam predicted Lord Buddha's appearance. That happened. Lord Chaitanya appeared. That happened. Something may be mentioned about Prabhupada. That happened. So we see that when a scripture is giving predictions and they take place, it gives great credit to the scripture. What is chapter 14? What is it? The system of universal management. Interesting. I was listening to a lecture on the way up here to the temple, and my guru, he was in Bhaktivedanta Manor, I think it was about 2000, around about 2000, and he went there on a Sunday morning to give class in Bhaktivedanta Manor, and on Sunday morning they read Prabhupada Lilamrita, and he opened the book, and it was talking about him with Prabhupada. So he said, oh, this is very nice, because I can tell all of you exactly what happened at that time. And he said he got in the car with Prabhupada in New York. They went to pick Prabhupada up from the airport. Rameshwara Maharaj, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, they went and picked up Prabhupada. Prabhupada got in the car, and he said, how is the management going? And they said to Prabhupada, everything is going well, Prabhupada, here in New York. They brought the big building, 13-story building. And Prabhupada said, everything requires expert management. Prabhupada emphasized, ISKCON must have expert management. How will ISKCON spread if it is not managed properly? If you can't even get to class on time? Leela Mai Radhika. Devi Dasi. I noticed. You're so good now. I don't know what happened. I prayed to Krishna for so many years. So the point is that there has to be expert management. So why does Krishna empower these manus? Because if he does not empower people to run this universe properly, the whole thing will fall apart. The universe will become chaos. And you see, that's what the government's like these days. We've got chaos all over the world. Right? Because not proper management. We don't have the right people managing properly. And not expert in management. So Prabhupada says everything requires expert management. Then our movement will spread. But without proper management, everything becomes very chaotic. So, why is it that there is this kind of management in the universe? Either the Lord appears himself as one of the manus, or he empowers one of the living entities to keep the whole system on track. So the whole universe is following Dharma as much as possible. So Prabhupada made one famous comment. He said, we want Arjuna or we want no one. What does this mean?
Prabhupada said devotees in this country should be like Arjuna. What was Arjuna like? Very well organized and very powerful. Prabhupada said these are the kind of devotees we need. Because without these kind of devotees, this cannot spread. The devotees have to be dynamic and they have to be very expert. And we have to spread the Sankirtan movement, the preaching movement, the ISKCON movement, very vigorously. And to spread it vigorously, it requires expert management. Just like in India, we have our Chaupati temple. I'm very famous for being well organized. One sannyasi said to me a while ago, he said we should just shut down the rest of the movement and just let them run it. Because they run it well. You see, whatever they do, it's very well organized. And it's spreading throughout India now, and it's spreading around ISKCON now further and further. Things should be very well organized, and then we will have success. If everything is not well organized, then nothing works. So what is the next chapter?
Bali Maharaj conquers the heavenly.
Conquers the
heavenly planets.
The heavenly planets, okay. So, how did Bali become so powerful? Yeah, he was blessed by the Guru. If you're not blessed by the Guru, you cannot do anything. If you're blessed by the Guru, you can become empowered to spread Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada himself, he emphasized that his potency or his ability to spread the movement came from the blessings of his spiritual master. Yasya prasada bhagavat prasado, yasya prasada nagati kato. Nagati kato means you cannot do anything. So, how did Bali become so powerful? Because he pleased Shukracharya. And because the Guru was pleased, he became powerful and then he could conquer the universe. Otherwise, it was not possible. And similarly, it is explained that if we offend the devotees, if we offend the Guru, we will lose all of our potency. So therefore, Brihaspati, he said to Indra, just wait. Bali will offend Shukracharya, potency will be lost, and then you will take over the universe again. So that is the system. If we get the blessings, everything goes forward. If we commit the offenses, everything is destroyed. So that is the simple way to make progress. If we want to preach effectively, if we want to advance effectively, if we want to become pure in Krishna consciousness, we have to receive the blessings of the spiritual masters. That is the system. So, Brihaspati said to Indra, just be patient. So in the material world, we don't like to be patient. Hands up if you're a very patient person. I'm not very patient. But if you want to be successful in Krishna consciousness, utsaha nishchayat daryat. Daryat means you have to learn to be patient. It takes time to become Krishna conscious. My spiritual master said to me once, he said, everything will come in time. Right? It takes time to become Krishna conscious. He said, if you just stick at it, eventually you will be successful. But that is what Krishna is testing. Are you going to stick at it? Or are you going to go off and watch all those Bollywood films? Are you going to stick at it or not? So Krishna wants to see, are we sincere? If we are sincere, then we will gradually become Krishna conscious. So, how does one get strength in bhakti? Strength in bhakti comes from blessings of the spiritual master. So we see that Bali became extremely powerful. And similarly, you see when Indra became powerful previously, everything comes down to worshipping the Guru and receiving the blessings of the Guru. Right? When the Guru is pleased, when the Vaishnavas are pleased, we become blessed and we can achieve things in Krishna consciousness. And then what is that final chapter called? Payobrata. Payobrata means it's a particular vow. Aditi, Kashyapa comes back from the forest. He says, where is everyone?
Aditi said they've all gone because the demons attacked, the demigods were defeated, they fled in fear of their life. I want them back on the throne. So Kashyapa said, then you must perform Payo Vrata. You must perform Vrata. So in other words, we cannot achieve anything in Krishna consciousness unless we take Vrata. Vrata means vow. If you're not chanting 16 rounds every day, you won't go back to Godhead. Right? If you're not following the four regulative principles, you cannot progress in spiritual life. Right? So there must be vows. And if you want to progress in Krishna consciousness, you have to become more and more serious in your Krishna consciousness. Just like Burujan Prabhu was telling us at the retreat. Right? He said, everyone, I want you to take a vrat that you will do something for 1 week which will help you to advance in Krishna consciousness. So everyone had to think, what is it I can do? I can read more. Some devotees told me. They said, I will read every day for 1 week because I don't read every day. Or I will chant my rounds better. Or I will increase the standard of deity worship for 1 week. So you have to work out what it is you will do. But everyone has to take brata. Brata means some vow that I will improve, I will increase, I will do better. I will give Krishna more pleasure. So that is how we advance in Krishna consciousness. So Aditi, she took a payo brata, and by that vow, she put the demigods back on the throne. And that is the system. And vows are very powerful. Just like Gandhi, right? He took the vow of celibacy. Prabhupada said he pushed the British out of India from his vow of celibacy. Vows are very powerful. So when you take brata, then you become, you make advancement in Krishna consciousness. So, there were two main elements of her brata. One was the chanting of her mantra, the other one was the worship of her deity. So you see in ISKCON, basically that is our system. Right? ISKCON system is the Bhagavad Vidhi Marg, the Pancharatrika Vidhi Marg. We hear and chant about Krishna, we take vows to chant very sincerely, and to hear very sincerely, regularly, Nicham Bhagavata Sevaya. We take vows to regularly hear and chant about Krishna. And simultaneously, right, we take vows to worship the deity on a regular basis. So this is the system of how we become pure. You see, basically, that is what a deity was involved in. Right? Chanting her mantras, worshipping the deity, and she became purified. She became potent, and she passed that potency on to the demigods. And there are many examples of this. What's a nice example from the Mahabharata of the mother who gave blessings to the child? Gandhari. She gave blessings to Duryodhana. She said, because she took the vow, brata, right? She would not see. So how powerful did she become? Extremely powerful. So she said to Duryodhan, to protect you in the battle, you come before me naked, I will look at you and your body will become like iron. So she was on the way to see, Duryodhan was on the way to see Gandhari. Krishna said to Duryodhan, where are you going? He said, I have to stand naked before my mother, so I will become, my body will become like iron. He said, you cannot stand naked before the mother. Cover your thighs with the gumsha. So he went, right? She took off the cloth, and she looked at him, and she said, why did you wear the gumsha? And Krishna told me. He said, oh, Krishna has tricked you again. So the whole body became like iron except for the thigh. And then during the battle, then Krishna said to Bhima, he said, like that. And Bhima took the club and hit the thigh. So this is an example of how when the mother performs brata, she becomes powerful and she transfers that to the children. So Aditi, she transferred all the shakti to the demigods. And then they retained swaga, or they retained the kingdom of heaven once again. So that is the system in Krishna consciousness. If we want to become advanced, we want to become perfect, we have to follow vows very carefully. Any other points? Any questions? Any points?
Mm-hmm.
chapters 9 to 16.
Chapter 4, Prabhupada makes the point that Lord Shiva created by this, that makes him, Lord Shiva is both the three things. He's only a master. Prabhupada explains one of the verses that, just to show an example that this question is given by actually Lord Shiva is not going to be able
to. Yeah, Prabhupada makes many points in that chapter. Yeah, I said that one of the main points is that Shiva is, or Krishna is superior to Shiva. So that's how he bewilders him. Even though it was Yoga Maya that he becomes bewildered. And another point Prabhupada makes is that he wanted Shiva to reduce his pride, whether or not there was even pride in Shiva, but Krishna just wanted to show pastimes. Any other points? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki?
Yes.
So tomorrow night we'll continue with chapter 17. And then?
Exam.
Next Monday, 7 o'clock here in the theatre, will be the exam closed book. And you will also be required to hand in your open book papers. Otherwise you'll lose marks if they come after next Monday. So. Thank you very much. Please come again. Srila Prabhupada ki.